We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Please welcome Henning Vane, Zoe Lyons, Ian Smith and Lucy Porter. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth, or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Lucy Porter. Lucy, your subject is potatoes, starchy, tuberous vegetables native to the Americas that are consumed as a staple food in many parts of the world. Off you go, Lucy. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
Potatoes were introduced to the UK by Sir Francis Drake, who used them to make his games of bowls less predictable. In 1603...
Zoe. Oh, and I'm having a flashback to school. I thought it was Francis Drake who brought the potato back, but is it too obvious and I've made a complete boo-boo straight on?
You have made an error early on, yes. It's often said to be Sir Walter Raleigh.
Oh, that's right, yes.
It's not often said to be Sir Francis Drake.
They're so interchangeable, aren't they? I mean, beard, tights, a love of a tuba. I mean, that's why I get them confused. Yeah.
Actually, recent research by historians indicates that they were introduced to Ireland by Basque fishermen and to England by Spanish merchants.
In 1603, King James I of England wrote his famous treatise, A Counterblast to the Potato. Do you know what? Weirdly, I've got a bit of crisp. Just stuck in my...
Ian.
I think it's true that Lucy has a bit of crisp.
We did see her eat crisps.
Yeah,
back
yeah.
Today. In fact, she volunteered to finish off a packet of crisps that I was losing interest in. So, I mean, it's circumstantial evidence, but I think we can give you the point for now.
Dried potato peelings were used to replace goose feathers in pillows, leading to the phrase, the chips are down. I'm glad you like that. I was proud of that. Current varieties of potato grown in the UK include the Rutland Arrow, the Kent Torpedo, Lineker's Lunchbox and the Michael Gove.
Henning.
Can be any of them. I mean, the Michael Gove we can discard. The Lineker one, well, he advertises them crisps, doesn't he? So, still, I don't think it's that one either. I think it's the Rutland one. Mind you, it's the smallest county in Britain. They've hardly any space to grow potatoes.
Salad potato. They could do new potatoes.
Yeah. Well, do we want to go as
half
a team?
And half.
Half and half.
Why not?
No, you can't. No. Henning, you've buzzed, and then you've really shown your working to a greater extent than is required. What do you think might be true?
The Rutland one.
No. Lucy. Oh, Henning.
How about the Kent Torpedo?
You're going for double or quits.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Short-lived potato crisp flavours include rhubarb and custard, strawberry fool, duck à l'orange, battleship Potemkin.
Ian.
I think I've had duck à l'orange crisps.
Well, I think you were dreaming. we're unaware of any duck à l'orange crisps, if you can, provide us evidence of them.
Yeah, I'm afraid not. No.
The most popular toy in the world is Mr. Potato Head, with over 6 billion units being sold every year.
Ian.
Yeah, Mr. Potato Head feels popular. I mean, it's so popular they brought out a wife version for him. Yeah. It's very rare a toy gets a wife.
That's true. Lego doesn't have a wife, does it? I mean, I'm not sure how that would work. But no, despite the wife, Mr. Potato Head is not the most popular toy in the world.
Okay.
Female Lego just be the things go the other way?
Do you see what the bumps on Lego are little penises to you?
Yeah.
And you think they could... But I suppose that world, the vaginas are on the underside of the brick that you put on top.
It would hurt a lot less to tread on a vagina, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That is not a statement that I can get behind.
It's more of a slipping hazard, though.
just in the hope of getting the broadcastability light to go back on. Lucy.
Mr. Potato Head was invented by the Idaho Potato Growers Association in 1948 to promote the health-giving properties of the vegetable.
Henning.
That's the first thing that actually sounds plausible.
And yet it's the sixth time you've bumped. it's not true, I'm afraid.
The wholesome message was slightly undercut by the fact that the original toy was covered in lead paint, smoked a pipe and carried a flick knife. The iconic pretend potato has acted as an aspirational role model for children, with special editions such as Scientist Mr. Potato Head, Director of Public Prosecutions Mr. Potato Head, and Wayne Rooney. In 1985, Mr. Potato Head received 4 votes in the mayoral contest for Boise, Idaho.
Zoe.
That sounds plausible.
4 votes in the mayoral contest for Boise, Idaho. That's absolutely right. And as a result, Mr. Potato Head currently holds the Guinness World Record for, quote, most votes for a toy in a political campaign.
Among those who've appreciated the beauty of the potato are Leonardo da Vinci, who used potatoes as stand-ins for the figures in his painting of The Last Supper, Peter Carl Fabergé, who is renowned for his exquisite Fabergé potato, and Katy Perry, who wore a dress entirely made of potato sacks to the 2022 Met Gala. The potato isn't just beautiful. It also has many uses around the home. You can use one in your bathroom as a proven means to cure spot breakouts. Potato juice can demist your car's windscreen. And if you hold a potato to your ear, you can hear the sound of Norfolk.
Thank you, Lucy. And at the end of that round, Lucy, you have managed to smuggle 4 truths past the rest of the panel. The first truth is that of that long list of potato crisp flavours, the one that was true is Strawberry Fool. It was a short-lived potato crisp flavour. In 2017, Scottish crisp manufacturer Mackey's developed Strawberry Fool flavoured crisps specifically for the Chinese market. The second truth is that Mr. Potato Head smoked a pipe. That was hidden. The third truth is that Peter Carl Fabergé is renowned for his exquisite Fabergé potato.
No.
Crafted around 1890, the Fabergé potato is just under 4 inches long in a realistic, irregular shape and carved from pink agate. And the fourth truth is that you can use a potato to demist your car's windscreen. Once applied, leave to dry, then buff off. And that means, Lucy, you've scored 4 points. OK, we turn now to Ian Smith. Ian, your subject is Yorkshire, a historic county in northern England named after its original county town, the city of York. Off you go, Ian.
Most Yorkshire traditions can be traced back to its invasion by the Vikings in the late 1970s. Things brought to Yorkshire by the Vikings include the greeting A-up and the swear word chuffin, which originates from the chafing sound a sword makes when it is being unsheathed. Absolutely everybody knows Yorkshire's reputation for breaking records. Its record-breaking train stations include Cleckheaton Central, the only train station in the world to have been stolen. And the least busy train station in the UK, Shipton Hill, with only 1 scheduled train per month.
Lucy.
Sorry, I might go for Shipton Hill.
No. No, there's no station with the specific name Shipton Hill. And Denton in Greater Manchester is the least busy station, open all year round, with an average of 54 passengers a year.
Oh. But you still can't get a seat.
The county has the highest vape shop to person ratio in the world. And was home to the first man to throw a javelin so far it killed a judge.
I'm going for that.
Zoe.
Yeah, I reckon that's happened.
The javelin, killed a judge.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, God.
Due to the way the judge fell and was stretchered off, the javelin didn't technically touch the ground until 6 miles later at Leeds Hospital. When we think of Yorkshire agriculture, we all immediately think of forced rhubarb.
Lucy.
I do, that's true.
I don't. So. Which means we don't all, so
I think
it isn't.
Of the rhubarb triangle. Mm.
Forced rhubarb is like the foie gras of the north, isn't it?
What is the rhubarb triangle? Is that a thing?
It's where rhubarb disappears.
Seriously. Yeah, sort of around the Pontefract area. It's just the ideal conditions for rhubarb. And they put them in a dark room, they put lots of candles in, and the candle makes the rhubarb
romantic.
Think that is the sun.
Oh, no, so it grows desperately towards it?
Yeah, yeah. Rhubarb is thick.
Yeah.
It's really stupid.
Yeah. Ian.
But ingenious Yorkshire farmers have many other methods of speeding up plant growth in the area, such as peer-pressured pumpkin, coerced tomatoes and bullied licorice. According to the 1992 census, there were two people in Yorkshire given the name Pepsi. There were also over 50 people with the surname Max, making it the most likely area of the UK to create the first person legally called Pepsi Max. One person had the surname Cherry, so it's all to play for if we're aiming... for the ultimate branded name.
Henny.
50 Maxes, that sounds about right.
No.
Oh.
I've never heard of anyone with the surname Max.
It's a German centre forward, Martin Max.
Oh. So, okay.
Sorry, is a...
We just need to find another 49 or 50, in fact, in Yorkshire, and then you could get a point. So I'll get back to you. Ian.
Excitement is high, as such a thing hasn't happened in Yorkshire since 1379, when a baby girl was christened Diet Coke. A name everyone knows is Yorkshireman Percy Shaw, who became a multimillionaire after he invented the cat's eye. Before that, cats were completely blind.
Lucy.
Percy Shaw did invent the cat's eye, didn't he?
He did indeed.
Yes.
Although he didn't become a multimillionaire, his estate was worth £193,500 when it entered probate in 1976. Ian.
If it's humorously named towns and villages you're after, Yorkshire offers you Cocklethorpe, Dickchester, or one village simply called Piss.
Zoe.
I think I've been through Piss.
No, I don't think you have. Now, that might be a bit of a duck à l'orange moment. There's no such place. It does have a tickle cock bridge, a butt lane.
Definitely been there.
Yeah. Wet wang, sex how, and nether thong. So it's doing its best. Ian.
The most northern sounding town is the village of Fryup, which I know has refused a request from animal rights supporters to change its name to Vegan Fryup.
Henning.
I think I remember that happening. Mr. Vegan Fryup.
You're absolutely right. Yes. In November 2014, the Yorkshire village of Fryup declined an offer from the animal rights charity PETA to change its name to Vegan Fryup in exchange for a supply of tofu eggs, soya milk and vegan sausages and bacon for the residents. So, there we go.
In conclusion, that's all you need to know about Yorkshire, God's own country.
Thank you, Ian. And at the end of that round, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that the Yorkshire greeting Eyup is widely believed to have derived from the Norse Seyup, meaning look out or be careful. So it was originally used by the Vikings, as you said. The second truth is that Cleckheaton Central is the only train station in the world to have been stolen. In 1972, a 33-year-old man from Dewsbury was sent for trial at Wakefield after Cleckheaton Central Station disappeared. He was charged with stealing stone, timber and metal worth £600, as well as 135 yards of railway track, chairs and buffer stops worth £251. In the words of the prosecution, what the case really comes to is that this man, last August, in effect, stole Cleckheaton Station. He was found not guilty on the grounds that he had been contracted to remove the items by a company which could no longer be traced. And the third truth is that in 1379, a baby girl was christened Diet Coke. It's Diot Coke. Diot was short for Dionysia, an early form of the modern-day Denise, and Coke was a corruption of Cook. So that means, Ian, you've scored 3 points. Next up is Zoe Lyons. Zoe lives in Brighton, where she's a keen sea swimmer. So if you see her in the summer looking brown, it's not a tan. Zoe, your subject is wine, an alcoholic drink made from fermented fruit, usually grapes. Off you go, Zoe.
When it comes to an enhanced wine experience, research has shown that champagne tastes better when you are naked, white wallpaper makes wine taste worse, and people over the age of 75 can smell sherry from further away than their younger counterparts. The common drinker's warning of not breaking the seal by going to the loo is thought to derive from a torture process in ancient Rome where gallons of wine were poured down a man's throat and then his penis was tied up so that he couldn't urinate. Although this practice often resulted in the death of the victim, he did acquire the status of total legend for being bestowed with enough hosing to not.
Ian.
I'm going to give Zoe the benefit of the doubt and say she didn't, when she was writing this, just imagine a man strapping his penis as like a form of torture. So I think that must be true. Otherwise, Zoe's just come up with it.
So you said either it's true or Zoe is a problematic sadist.
Yeah.
Well, it is true. Yes, according to the Roman historian Suetonius, this, combined with being tied on a rack, was Emperor Tiberius's idea. Suetonius writes, among other kinds of tortures he invented, one was to draw in the poor wretches to drink a great quantity of wine, and presently to tie their members with a lute string, that he might rack them at once with the girting of the string and with the pressure of the urine.
I reckon if you offered that at a Wetherspoons, you'd get takers.
Zoe.
Pinot Meow is a red wine for cats, which has resulted in a huge rise in the number of intoxicated felines locking themselves out of their own cat flaps late at night and having to call a neighbour in the early hours. If you prefer your animals in wine rather than on it, you might enjoy what might be the original version of Ratatouille, a delightful combination of French cellar rat in a red wine sauce that's cooked over a flaming wine barrel, or perhaps drunken shrimp, which is live shrimp served in Chinese rice wine. Truly one of the few culinary experiences where the diner can be as inebriated as their dinner.
Lucy.
Live shrimp in a rice wine.
Mm.
Yes. Sounds delicious. Mm.
Do you think?
Do you think it's true?
I do think it's true.
It is true. Yes. Drunken shrimp is a popular dish in some parts of China. The alcohol forces the shrimp to expel their wastes. The shrimp are then eaten, generally after their movement has ceased. I don't know if that means after they've stopped moving or after they've stopped shitting. I prefer them dead in Mary Rose sauce. Thank you, Zoe. And at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle 3 truths past the rest of the panel, which are that white wallpaper makes wine taste worse, according to Charles Spence, professor of experimental psychology at Oxford University, who has collaborated with Heston Blumenthal on the effects of sound and colour on our perceptions of taste. After a 4-day experiment at London's South Bank Centre in 2014, people said that they would be willing to pay significantly more for wine tasted in front of a red rather than a white background. The second truth is that Pinot Meow is a red wine for cats. Made from organic catnip, water and beetroot to give it a nice red wine colour, which I'm sure the cat really appreciates. And the third truth is that French cellar rat in a red wine sauce that's cooked over a flaming wine barrel is a genuine dish. The following recipe appears in the Encyclopedia of Gastronomy, La Russe Gastronomique. Quote, alcoholic rats inhabiting wine cellars are skinned and eviscerated, brushed with a thick sauce of olive oil and crushed shallots, and grilled over a fire of broken wine barrels. Mm. So, you know, why not give it a try?
Yum, yum. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that means, Zoe, you've scored 3 points. Swirling your wine around a large wine glass invites oxygen into the glass, releasing the drink's subtle aromas. On the downside, it does make you look like an absolute bellend. When Napoleon launched his disastrous invasion of Russia in 1812, he took 28 million bottles of wine with him. An embarrassing display of misplaced optimism about the length of his stay, matched in history only by the 12-pack of loo rolls Liz Truss bought for her time in Manhattan. It's now the turn of Henning Vane. Henning was brought up in the city of Hagen in the west of Germany. The city centre isn't very picturesque, but let's be honest, that's sort of our fault. Henning's... Your subject, Henning, is beaches. Strips of land covered with sand, shingle or small stones at the edge of a body of water such as an ocean or lake. Off you go, Henning.
Beaches were invented by Jesus. So he could do baptisms without the need for running water. In fact, Jesus gave regular sermons on the beach. Eventually, Jesus turned his beach trips into a full family day out. Jesus built a pier, provided little donkey rides, whack-a-mula, and guessed the weight of the Pharisee. Jesus Beach became so popular, it started taking business away from the nearby Roman baths and Bartlin's Galilee. It became a massive franchise with Jesus Beaches all over the world, but was severely hit by COVID-19 AD and staff shortages due to crucifixions. Today, the only Jesus Beach in the former Roman Empire is in Turkey.
Lucy.
Is there a Jesus Beach in Turkey?
Well spotted. Yes, there is. Yes, along the Turkish Riviera, about half an hour from Marmaris, is a beach known as Jesus Beach, due to a 600-metre-long sandbar, which creates the illusion that people are walking on the water.
The University of Exeter found in 2017 that the beach in Torquay is biologically dead because of dogs using it as a toilet. Although without animal excrement, we wouldn't have many of our best holiday destinations. Most of the beaches of Hawaii are entirely made from whoopsies.
Zoe.
Isn't sand made from fish poops?
Sometimes, yes.
So,
yes.
Did I miss the first bit?
No.
Did I just lock
the
in?
The thing that is true, and you're going to get a point for,
right,
is that most of the beaches of Hawaii are entirely made from whoopsies and poo. While some beaches in Hawaii are made up of black sand derived from volcanic deposits, the majority are made up of fish guano, specifically parrotfish poo. Parrotfish feed on the algae that grows on coral, so they gnaw it off with their beak-like teeth, and in the process ingest a large amount of calcium carbonate that coral is made of. This they then defecate in the form of gorgeous white tropical sand. A single Hawaiian parrotfish can defecate 800 pounds of sand a year.
Whoa.
So there
wow.
It is. All that lovely sand, it's all been through a parrotfish.
It's amazing to think you could crap out a dune, isn't it? It's just shat out a golf course.
Henny.
And in Germany, they value their beaches, and Nationaler Strandtag is celebrated every July the 8th, when families get a day off work to visit the beach. Regardless of what the weather is doing, it is considered unpatriotic not to visit the beach on Nationaler Strandtag. Traditionally, children bring back pieces of seaweed and drape them on the doormats of people who are suspected not to have taken part. They also smash in some of their windows. Of course, Germans do their beach going in utmost safety. At Travemünde on the Baltic Sea, all sandcastles must be knocked down at the end of each day. This is because more people are killed by sandcastles than sharks.
Zoe.
I'm going to go for that one. Sandcastles, they are, well, they're shoddily built. Particularly
not in Germany.
Not in Germany. But I bet more people get killed by sandcastles and sharks every year.
That is absolutely right.
Well done.
Falling into holes dug in a beach while making sandcastles caused more deaths than shark attacks between 1990 and 2006.
The movie wouldn't be as interesting, though, would it?
No. A slow-moving sandcastle.
You're going to need a bigger spade.
The sand at Omaha Beach in Normandy is 4% shrapnel, caused by an unprovoked cross-channel expedition con-littering offence in the summer of 1944.
Could it be 4% shrapnel?
It is 4% shrapnel. Yeah. The beach, which was the site of the Allied D-Day invasion, remains contaminated by remnants of World War II projectiles.
Let that be a lesson to all of us. A lot of suffering could have been avoided if Britain had just surrendered.
Well, that's certainly food for thought. Henny.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, in the end, we die the same as we dream, alone. But at least we always have beaches and Jesus.
Thank you, Henning. And at the end of that round, Henning, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that at Travemünde on the Baltic Sea, all sandcastles must be knocked down at the end of each day. And beaches in Kellenhusen and Grösenbroder have prohibited any sandcastles over 4 metres in height. It's barely worth making if it's under 4 metres. And how was my pronunciation?
Hilarious.
It takes one to know one. And that means, Henning, you've scored 1 point. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place with minus 5 points, we have Henning Vane. In third place with 2 points, it's Zoe Lyons. In second place with 3 points, it's Ian Smith. And in first place with an unassailable 4 points, it's this week's winner, Lucy Porter. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Ian Smith, Zoe Lyons, Lucy Porter and Henning Vane. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.